Today, a tradable bounce within a downtrend. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and broad news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In today's market update, we look at the action this week and try and parse out what's really going on. All three major US benchmarks surged higher into the close on Friday, with the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ recording their best weeks since November 2020. Oil was steady, and on Wall Street, the Dow was up 0.8% to 34,754, while the S&P 500 was up 1.17% to 4,463, and the NASDAQ lifted 2.1% to 13,893. Equity transactions spiked at the open as the expiry of stocks and index options collided with that of index futures in a quarterly event known as triple witching. Roughly 3.5 trillion US dollars of single stock and index level options were estimated to expire, so the market is likely distorted by these technical issues. This triple witching, when stock options, stock index futures, and index option contracts expire on the same day, usually triggers wild moves as investors move out of old positions and take new ones. Growth sectors of the market, like tech, were also helped by falling interest rates, even as federal officials urged the central bank to do even more. The 10-year US Treasury slid 1.7% to 2.155. The 30-year was down 2.45% to 2.424, while the 2-year rose by 0.18% to 1.944, and the 3-year was up 0.18% to 2.1437. This suggests that while rates will go higher in the short term, longer-term recessionary trends may in fact pull rates lower later. The Federal Reserve approved this week a 25 basis point increase in its March 15th, 16th meeting. That's the first increase since the outbreak of the COVID-19 crisis in March 2020. The central bank also cautioned that there could be as many as 6 more rate hikes this year, based on the number of calendar meetings for its policy-making Federal Open Market Committee, or FOMC. Following through with the Wednesday rate decision, the Fed Governor Christopher Waller, one of the more hawkish members of the FOMC, said that US economic data is screaming for bigger half percentage point rate hikes in coming months to stamp out inflation. Waller's comments, along with similar hawkish messages from other Fed representatives, helped the dollar rebound on Friday, thumbing down commodities denominated in currencies, including gold. The dollar fell more than 1% in the past two sessions, combined as currency dealers reacted with disappointment to the Fed's modest rate hike on Wednesday. The dollar is seeing massive inflows, and that is short-term troubling for commodities, said Ed Moyer, analyst for Europe on online trading platform Onya. The dollar will benefit from a rapidly improving interest rate differential and steady safe haven flows as investors become worrisome over the war in Ukraine's impact on inflation and ultimately growth. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell reiterated after this week's rate increase that the central bank will be nimble as it tries to balance the fastest economic growth in nearly four decades with inflation also growing at its most frenetic pace in 40 years. US gross domestic product was up 5.7% last year from a 3.5% contraction in 2020, growing at its most since 1984. Inflation, measured by the Consumer Price Index or CPI, expanded by 5.8% in 2021. That's the most since 1982. Of course, the Fed has two mandates, aiming for maximum employment among Americans with a jobless rate of 4% or below, and keeping inflation at 2% or below a year. It's achieved stellar success with the first target by bringing unemployment down to 3.8% in February from a pandemic and record high of 14.8% in April 2020, although, of course, migration was somewhat reduced. but its track record has been miserable on the second, with CPI growing by 7.9% during the year to February, growing even faster than December's 7%. Waller, who has consistently pushed for tighter monetary policy and higher fiscal discipline to tame inflation, said the risks from the Ukraine war led him to support more dovish colleagues on the FOMC in voting for a subdued rate hike at the March meeting, but he said he might push for a series of 50 basis point increases at coming FOMC meetings to front load a tighter policy that would have a greater impact on tamping down inflation. Going forward, that will be an issue about going 50 in the next couple of meetings, Waller said, anticipating resistance from other FOMC members. But the data is suggesting we move in that direction. I really favour front-loading our rate hikes. Let's just do it, rather than just promise it. Most federal officials see rates rising to around 1.9% by the end of 2022 if the FOMC keeps to its 25 basis point hikes at the next six meetings. The remarks arrived on the heels of remarks from St. Louis Fed President James Bullard, who suggested the Fed hike rates by 50 basis points several times this year to push the central bank's rate up to 3% by the end of the year. That, of course, will be well above the Fed's current outlook for rates at 1.9%. The Federal Bank of New York released their underlying inflation gauge, that UIG. The UIG captures sustained movements in inflation from information contained in a broad set of price, real activity, and financial data. The price's only underlying inflation gauge is derived from a large number of disaggregated price series in the Consumer Price Index, while the full data set measures additional macroeconomic and financial variables as well. The UIG full set data, measured for February, is currently estimated at 4.8%. That's a 0.1 percentage point increase from the previous month. The price's only measure for February is currently estimated at 5.4%. That's a 0.2 percentage point increase from the previous month. And the 12-month change in the February CPI was 7.9%. That's a 0.4 percentage point increase from the previous month. For February 2022, trend CPI inflation is estimated to be in the 4.8 to 5.4 range, a wider range than in January, with its lower and upper bounds 0.1 and 0.2 percentage points higher, respectively. Investors were also relieved by slowing gains in oil prices as they continue to digest the Federal Reserve's Wednesday interest rate increases and its aggressive plan for further hikes aimed at combating soaring inflation. US President Joe Biden also warned Chinese leader Xi Jinping during a call that there could be consequences if Beijing gave material support to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the White House said. Both sides stressed the need for a diplomatic solution to the crisis. While Xi called on NATO nations to hold a dialogue with Moscow, he did not assign blame to Russia for the invasion. The readout from the meeting was as expected, said Art Hogan, chief market strategist at National Securities in New York. He said that since Russia and Ukraine talks were continuing, investors were trending towards optimism. Regarding Russia-Ukraine, the market has been more positive on news from the diplomatic front than negative on the escalation. Hogan also cited calmer oil prices and relief that the highly anticipated Fed news was finally out. Instead of having fears and trepidation of what the Fed might do, we have a clear roadmap for monetary policy, he said. In addition to less onerous than expected Fed actions, Steve Sosnick, chief strategist at Interactive Brokers in Greenwich, said investors were reassured that US crude oil prices weren't too far above $100 on Friday after recently hitting more than $130. At least for this week, oil prices have found a level. That's some way positive for the market, as a rising oil price is overweighted in consumers' minds as an inflationary indicator, says Sosnick. So does the market like oil around $100? No, but it is happier that it's around $100 than going up $20 every day. Well, of course. Tech continued to see a comeback, and remains on course to snap a two-week losing streak as investors continue to pile into big tech. Meta Platforms led the pack up more than 3%, followed by Amazon, Apple, Alphabet, and Microsoft, all up more than 1%. Chip stocks were also in the ascendancy, supported by a nearly 6% gain in Nvidia, as the chipmaker extends its rally for a fourth straight day. Wall Street's three main indices boasted their weekly biggest percentage gain since early November 2020, with the S&P adding 6.2%, while the Dow rose 5.5% and the Nasdaq jumped 8.2%. 10 of the 11 major S&P 500 sectors closed higher, with heavyweight technology and consumer discretionary both finishing up 2.2%, while communication services were up 1.4%. In fact, the only declining sector was utilities, which ended the session down 0.9%. And US-listed shares of major Chinese companies, including Didi Global and Alibaba, surged, set to close out the week marked by China's top policymakers laying out plans to support the country's capital markets. The Golden Dragon Index on the Nasdaq lifted a further 7.5% to 7,416. And the Volatility Index slid 0.71% to 2387. And gold was down for a second straight week to its biggest weekly decline in percentage terms since November. Still, pressure on prices, combined with concerns over fallout from the Russian-Ukraine war, played up gold's dual economic political hedge to bring it back above the $1,900 support it briefly broke earlier in the week. The most active gold futures contract on New York's COMEX, April, settled down $13.90 or 0.7% to $1,929. For the week, the benchmark gold futures contract lost 2.8%. That's the most since the week of November the 19th, 2001. Bitcoin was a little higher, just above $41,000, but remains range-bound and volatile. The rally in the broader market has stoked debate on whether this is the start of a bottoming process or whether further downside risks lie ahead. Market technicians, however, urge caution on reading too much into the rally, as options expiry tends to muddy market movements. Technical indicators, including volumes and market breadth, have yet to improve significantly to signal that the market is establishing a bottom. If this is the beginning of something more broad-based, you'd want market breadth conditions to improve meaningfully, volume being strong as the price is still going higher. But I think the jury's still out on that, said Chief Market Strategist David Keller at Stock Charts. At this point, I'm still thinking of it as a tradable bounce within a downtrend, Keller added. In the UK, British stocks ended near session highs on Friday, and the Blue Chip Index clocked its best weekly performance in over a year, as investors digested negotiations over the Ukraine-Russia conflict and the dovish outlook from the Bank of England this week. The FTSE closed at 7,404, up 0.26%. Meanwhile, investors scaled back their expectations of future Bank of England rate hikes this year after the central bank raised rates for a third consecutive time on Thursday to 0.75%, but softened its language about further tightening. In the February monetary policy report, which was published before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, UK GDP growth was expected to slow to subdued rates during the course of this year. This is in large part reflecting the adverse impact of the previous already large increases in global energy and tradable goods prices on UK real aggregate income and spending. As a result, a margin of spare capacity was projected to open up and the unemployment rate to rise to 5% by 2025. CPI inflation was expected to peak at around 7.25% in April 2022. Upward pressure on inflation was expected to dissipate over time, and it was conditioned on the rising market-implied path for bank rate, which was expected at the time of the February report. and the current forecasting conventions for future energy prices. CPI inflation was also projected to fall back to a little above the 2% target in 2 years' time, and to be below the target by a greater margin in 3 years out. But developments since the February report are likely to accentuate both the peak in inflation and the adverse impact on activity by intensifying the squeeze on household incomes, they said. Regarding inflation, the invasion of Ukraine by Russia has led to further large increases in energy and other commodity prices, including food prices. And it's also likely to exacerbate global supply chain disruptions and has increased the uncertainty around the economic outlook significantly. Global inflationary pressures will strengthen considerably further over coming months, while growth in economies that are net energy importers, including the United Kingdom, is likely to slow, they said. Turning to economic activity, the UK GDP in January was stronger than expected in the February report, and business confidence has held up, and labour market activity data has remained robust, they said. Consumer confidence has however fallen in response to the squeeze on real household disposable incomes. That impact in real aggregate income is now likely to be materially larger than implied by the projections in the February report, consistent with a weaker outlook for growth and employment, all else being equal. The 12-month CPI inflation rose from 5.4% in December to 5.5% in January, which triggered the exchange of open letters between the Governor and the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Inflation is expected to increase further in coming months to around 8% in the second quarter of 2022, and perhaps go even higher later in the year. The projected overshoot of inflation relative to the 2% target to an increasing extent reflects global energy prices, with some further material contribution from tradable goods prices. Service price inflation has also picked up, although to a lesser extent than other components, with core services prices returning to their pre-COVID trend. Underlying nominal earnings growth is estimated to have remained above pre-pandemic rates and is still expected to strengthen over the coming year. On the markets, oil majors Shell and BP dropped 1.2% and 2.1% respectively as crude prices were subdued, but they did found a floor above $100 a barrel. Global miner Glencore rose 0.9% after HSBC started coverage with a buy rating. Ted Baker jumped 17.1% after US private equity firm Sycamore Partners said it was in the early stages of making a possible cash offer for the fashion retailer. And Vodafone gained 1.3% after Reuters reported that global infrastructure funds approached the network operator to invest in its $16 billion mast company, Vantage Towers. Nickel dropped by the maximum allowed for a third day in another glitchy opening in London, as the price continued its retreat from an unprecedented short squeeze last week. It's the third straight day that electronic trading suffered from problems related to the London Metal Exchange's new daily limits, introduced following the runaway price spike. The latest error compounds an embarrassing week for the 145-year-old exchange, which has already faced harsh criticism for its handling of the squeeze when prices surged by 250% before the exchange moved to close the market and cancel several hours' worth of trades. Nickel dropped 12% to the daily limit of $36,915 a tonne on Friday, but at least three trades went through at a price below the lower bound set by the exchange. The trades outside the limit will be cancelled. The embattled boss of the London Metal Exchange says the banking industry bears some responsibility for the conditions that led to a massive short squeeze that broke the nickel market. Banks last year lobbied against efforts to increase transparency in metals markets. LME Chief Executive Officer Matthew Chamberlain said in an interview, the proposed changes would have allowed the LME to crack down on the large short position held by Tingsheng Holdings Group Co., before it caused an unprecedented 250% price spike last week, he said. And rumours are circulating that Goldman Sachs traders have been offering to trade nickel away from the London Metal Exchange. The bank has been offering to trade contracts in commodity index products such as the S&P GSCI, whose constituents include nickel, implying a bid and offer for the nickel price. The bank's proposals imply a bid for nickel at around $25,000 a tonne and an offer around $37,000 a tonne. This shows you once again just how complicated these markets have become and the role of the banks behind the scenes in influencing markets. While the FTSE is still lower on the month, its losses were less than its continental peers, such as the German DAX, as a rally in commodity prices boosted oil and mining majors on the index. The DAX closed 1.7% higher to 14,413. Chinese markets had a roller coaster week, with an extraordinary sell-off in Chinese shares on Monday and Tuesday, with panic selling caused by geopolitical concerns, mass COVID-19 lockdowns, and economic worries, taking major indices towards decade lows. The sell-off early in the week was driven by a perfect storm of four key concerns: the threat of sanctions on China for being too close to Russia, a new Omicron wave and resultant mass lockdowns, the potential delisting of Chinese companies in the US, and the state of China's domestic economy. Then came the surprise set of announcements on Tuesday night from President Xi Jinping's economic czar, Vice Premier Li Hui, including promises to lift economic growth and actively introduce policies that benefit markets, including rectifying a crackdown on Chinese internet players and stabilising the property sector as a reaction to domestic worries. Some have suggested this week's sudden embrace of economic growth and the bolstering of markets represents a capitulation of Xi's economic reform push. Having set a target for 5.5% growth in 2022, authorities needed to show how that would be achieved, particularly given the threat imposed by COVID-19. So expect to see a pickup in infrastructure spending, which clearly will be bullish for Australia's key export of iron ore. But the property sector is the next challenge, and restoring sentiment and sales there will take time. Lenders may remain sceptical about the sector too. Demand and prices are both down. And more broadly, the question is, can consumers in China be persuaded to spend more? China Evergrande Group's flagship unit, Henge Real Estate, said that it will meet onshore bondholders on Friday and Saturday to delay a coupon payment due last September to September this year. The property developer said last September that it had settled the coupon payment of the 4 billion yuan, or $629 million, the Shenzhen traded bond due September the 23rd, 2025, via negotiations with bondholders without giving details. In a filing dated on Thursday, Henge said that it would hold meetings with creditors of the 2025 bond on March the 18th and 19th to approve the payment of interests occurred between September 2020 to September 2021 to be made on September 2023. Struggling with more than $300 billion in liabilities, Evergrande has so far avoided technical bond defaults onshore, though it has missed payments on some offshore bonds. While it has yet to start negotiations with offshore creditors on debt restructuring, it has tried to seek more time from onshore bondholders for coupon and redemption payments to avoid a technical default. In January, it secured approval from onshore bondholders to delay by 6 months payments on a puttable bond worth 4.5 billion yuan. Nevertheless, overall the week ended with the Chinese markets firmly in the black. Analysts are now waiting for authorities to make good on fresh promises of economic growth and market stability. The Shanghai index was up 1.12% to 3,251, while the Hang Seng slid 0.41%, 21,412. Australian shares rebounded this week thanks to a mid-week rally sparked by a strong labour force report and reassuring comments from the US Federal Reserve as it raised interest rates for the first time since 2018. The ASX 200 rose 0.6% or 43 points to 7,294 on Friday and lifted its weekly gain to 3.3%. However, US equity futures slipped in the afternoon ahead of a call between President Joe Biden and China's Xi Jinping about the war in Ukraine, in which Biden will reportedly warn of the cost Beijing will pay if it were to further back Vladimir Putin. It's possible we may have seen the lows in shares, but uncertainty remains high around the war, and inflation is still likely to get worse before it gets better, keeping uncertainty high around the extent of monetary tightening, said Shane Oliver, head of investment strategy at AMP Capital. So far, the rebound in shares has lacked the breadth and strength often seen coming out of market bottoms. The Australian share market took a strong lead from Wall Street on Friday, where all three major benchmarks had advanced by more than 1%, led by the 1.3% rise by the Nasdaq. That translated to a 0.2% gain for the local market at the open, and they held onto that for most of the day before a rush of late buying into the close. The energy sector led the local market higher after the Brent crude oil price rose 8.8% to $106.64 a barrel. Woodside Petroleum climbed 2.7% to $31.37, and Ampol added 3.1% to $30.59. Iron ore prices edged closer to $150 a ton on renewed hopes for additional stimulus in China to combat the effects of its COVID-19 resurgence. Rio Tinto firmed 1.6% to $110.34. Fortescue added 2.2% to $18.57. And BHP climbed 1.3% to $46.25. Square led the local technology sector higher again on Friday, rising 7.2% to $168.88, capping off a strong week. And Zipco added 1.6% to $1.60. The major banks experienced a mixed session, with the National Australia Bank up 0.2% to 31.21, Commonwealth Bank up 0.1% to 106.29, ANZ climbed 0.2% to 27.58, while Westpac edged 0.1% lower to 23.66. Star Entertainment shares dropped 3.6% to $3.19 because of concerns a probe could declare the casino giant unfit to operate. Star said it does not consider it appropriate to comment about the media reports as the matter remains before the review. And standing back, massive price spikes for food and energy sparked by Russia's invasion of Ukraine will push over 40 million people into extreme poverty, the Center for Global Development said on Friday, warning against export curbs and sanctions on Russian food production. In a blog, the Washington-based think tank said food commodity prices since the start of the conflict had risen above levels experienced in the price spikes of 2007 and 2010. It cited World Bank research showing that the 2007 spike may have pushed as many as 155 million people into extreme poverty, and separate research showing the 2010 episode pushed 44 million into extreme poverty. Price increases seen to date are already of a similar magnitude to the 2010 increases, and our analysis suggests at least 40 million people will be pushed into extreme poverty by the 2022 price spike, they said. The World Bank defines extreme poverty as living on less than $1.90 a day. The researchers said the most immediate concern was for direct weak customers of Ukraine and Russia, which together account for more than a quarter of world wheat exports. Those include Egypt, Indonesia, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Azerbaijan, and Turkey. But prices will rise worldwide as importers compete for alternative supplies. Households in low-income countries allocate nearly half of their budgets to food, and higher prices will force hard choices between food and other necessities. The blog urged development agencies and international finance institutions to move quickly to respond to a clear increase in humanitarian needs around the world, while wealthy governments should provide supplemental funding to the institutions well in advance of the coming food crisis. there are lessons to be learned from the 2007 price spike, they said. As then, rising energy prices are pushing up input costs, and pressure is being exacerbated by concerns about production and stock levels. But arguably, the key driver of the 2007 spike was export bans. This, they said, is a key lesson, illustrated by what happened in rice markets. Global prices doubled, even in the absence of any real-world production issues, as India and Vietnam banned exports. For other major producers outside of Ukraine, keeping trade open is crucial to enable farmers to respond, as is avoiding sanctions on food and fertilizer. Hungary's knee-jerk export ban shows exactly what not to do, although this will have little impact on global supply, they said. Politicians and policymakers need to resist political pressure and explain the value of collective openness. Frustratingly for policymakers, their options for actions that genuinely help are limited. There is a case to relax biofuel mandates, a requirement to include food-based energy in fuel, but high energy prices means this is unlikely to make a big difference. There are also calls to temporarily lift some environmental standards on land set aside for biodiversity, but even if desirable, these are unlikely to add much to alleviate current supply issues. And they said a second key issue for policymakers is to ready themselves to navigate further shocks, including climate-related shocks. The G20's initiatives on improved data, AMIS, on traditional information, and GeoGLAM, on satellite data, has improved crop monitoring over the past decade and should enable policymakers to be ready for any further supply disruptions which emerge. It is early in the Northern Hemisphere wheat season, but there are some concerns about production, and although Chinese officials suggest that current winter wheat conditions may be the worst in history, the summer harvest appears to be much more promising. So amidst all of the day-to-day market moves, it is worth just pausing and thinking about these broader social issues. And the fact of the matter is, of course, that we are part of a global community and one very much driven by international trade. And so the more disruption comes through in terms of these trade relationships, the worse off will be. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction, but the negative impacts are not equally shared. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.